Let's move on because we've got about 10 minutes. You would ensure that every school leaver has three essential options: third level education, training for a skill, or an apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. Is that funded?
Is that
costed?
Apprenticeships is fascinating because, as I say, you know, nearly the entire private sector is made up of micro and SME organisations. The Federation of Small Businesses surveyed their membership not that long ago about apprenticeships, and actually it's quite a small percentage. I can't remember the exact figure. But surprisingly,
you can't
to my
remember
mind,
many of the figures this morning.
A surprisingly, to my mind, small percentage of companies avail of apprenticeships. But when they went on to ask why, and whether they would under different circumstances, a very large number said yes. And it wasn't just about financial assistance with taking on an apprentice. It was about paperwork. And you certainly couldn't accuse the executive and the Northern Ireland devolution system of not being fond of paperwork. Also, a lot of these small businesses are saying, well, we could take an apprentice 2 or 3 days a week, but not 5 days a week. And what is missing is the link in the chain that says, OK, you take the apprentice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll get another company to take them Thursday, Friday. And that's a function that, for example, Dell could perform, and it would not have a cost base.
Would there be a carrot and a stick approach here? So if a school leaver refused any of those three options, would they still get the dole?
I don't see why a school leaver would want to refuse any of those three options. Surely people have self-respect. Surely one of the things we want to do, and it's in this manifesto, is recognise that tens of thousands of our citizens who woke up this morning, as they do every morning, without a real sense of purpose in their lives, who go to bed without that sense of achievement that motivates you, motivates me, motivates people in work.
But a reality and a real policy is you would have to legislate, you would have to have an option. If someone said, I'm not doing that, I'm sitting in the house, would they lose the dole?
I'm not talking about the dole there. I'm talking about giving people options.
Yeah, but what would happen to them if they sat and they said, I'm not taking any of the three options?
Well, then they're
going to... None of them suit me. Would they still get the dole? It's a completely valid question.
Well, if none of those suit them, all they want to do then, clearly, is sit on the dole on benefits.
And would you continue to give it
to them? Well, that is a lifestyle choice that I do not support. So I think ultimately there would have to be a sanction on that, yes.
And would that be a removal of their benefits?
If they're making absolutely no effort to contribute to society, why should society have to fund them open-endedly?
So you would remove their benefits?
At some point, there would have to be a sanction.
At what point?
That would be a matter for negotiation. That's not
another negotiation.
I'm here to talk about the manifesto, and the manifesto.
This is in your manifesto.
The manifesto
is to ensure that every school leaver has three options.
That's about options for what government does, not about what the recipient does.
In the last general election manifesto, 2010, the one you fought on the Tory UUP ticket, you said unemployed people who refuse reasonable job offers could lose their dole for 3 years. Is that still your policy?
No, that was then, and we are not fighting this election in association with any other political party, except in terms of having an agreement on a couple of constituencies.
Sure, no, I understand that, and that's the broader issue, isn't it? So I understand that. But unemployed people who refuse reasonable job offers, you once believed that they should lose their dole for up to 3 years. Is that still your policy?
That sounds to me in 2015 a little punitive.
But so it was a mistake back then?
No, I'm saying today it sounds a little punitive.
What's the difference between then and now?
5 years.
What's changed?
My attitude.
Why?
Because I think it sounds punitive. I've reviewed it. I think it sounds punitive.
So it was a mistake.
Well, I didn't write the manifesto in 2010.
You stood on the ticket as a candidate.
I stood on the... Yeah.
Because you didn't write it doesn't mean you're not responsible if you support it and ask people to vote for you for it.
Well, not everybody in one party thinks the same way about everything, as we've seen over the last couple of days.
So unemployed people who refuse reasonable job offers today in Northern Ireland, 2015. For what period do you think they should lose their dole?
I don't think it should kick in for a number of months, and then once it kicks in, I think you have to work with them and try and persuade them that there is a better life to be had than sitting doing nothing.
For what period did you say?
I said I think it would kick in after a period of months.
And last for how long?
Stephen, I don't know. What I'm focused on in this is making sure that government provides the options You're only interested in what sanctions are implied if the options are not taken up.
There's got to be. You know, but rightly, there's got to be.
The more important thing is to make sure the options are there, and the options are not there.
You've got to incentivise people to take the options, Mike, don't you? So there's got to be a carrot and stick. There's got to be.
Yes. Well, I'm more focused on the carrot. You may like the stick, but I like the carrot.
You propose a creation of a Northern Ireland-owned bank.
Yes.
How would that work?
That would involve some very high wealth individuals in Northern Ireland having a bank. And it nearly happened, you know.
Having a bank?
Yes. The Northern Bank was nearly purchased by some high wealth individuals in Northern Ireland. It wasn't the last time it was up for sale. I think it was the time before that.
How do we benefit from that? How do ordinary people benefit from that?
Businesses will benefit from it, from access to finance. And if you speak to business people, access to finance is one of the biggest inhibitors to their growth and to their stability.
And that bank would be more generous than a German-owned bank, an Australian-owned bank, would it? How?
It would be more in tune with local business because it would be run by local business people and they wouldn't be constrained by being part of any other group.
And it would be legally Northern Ireland-owned, so any foreign investor would be banned from owning it or buying it over, for example.
Well, it would be a business.
Yes.
You and I could buy a business and run it.
Yes.
And that's what I'm talking about.
But it's your proposal, a creation of a Northern Irish-based bank. So could it...
No, they aren't owned.
Yes.
Yes, but local high-wealth individuals.
Yeah. Would they be incentivised by government? Would they be given tax breaks?
No, they would simply have control of the bank. Did you not know that there was nearly a local consortium that bought the Northern Bank years ago?
Could this bank then be sold at a profit?
Of course it could.
To foreign investors?
Of course it could. It's a business.
So why would you support it? Why would you back it?
But why would it be sold?
Why would you give a money-making exercise to high-wealth individuals and they've not got enough money?
I'm not giving it to them. I'm encouraging them to use their money to buy a bank. Some of them invest their money as business angels and as backers of the local economy. This is just another extension of that.
But they're entrepreneurs. Why would they set up the bank? They would set up the bank for profit.
Yes, and that might be good for business because
so you're supporting wealthy bankers and you're helping them set up more banks.
I'm not giving them a penny. What are you talking about?
But this is a policy. Is it a policy in your manifesto or why is it in there?
I think if you had a bank operated and owned by local business people, that would be good for access to finance for our private sector.
And would that bank only be able to lend to people in Northern Ireland?
No, they would do whatever they want. They'd be entrepreneurs, they're business people.
And you don't think that all of the banks that are based in Northern Ireland that may ultimately be owned by companies outside of Northern Ireland aren't represented and run by local people on the ground here?
I think that if there was no problem with access to finance, I wouldn't have put that in the manifesto. And I don't think you would be discussing access to finance in your show and in the newspapers, but it is an issue. Access to finance is an issue. I have listened to local business people, and this is one part of one solution of the solution.
When the controversy broke about Jim Wells' comments last week, did you think to yourself, oh no, what have I done? I've tied my party up on all of this.
No. Because, as I've explained, the understanding with the DUP is limited to four constituencies and it's about maximising the number of pro-union MPs after the 7th of May. It is not about social policies. That is why we have our manifesto and they have theirs.
You voted against gay marriage last night?
Yes.
Why?
Because I don't believe it is an equality issue. I believe marriage, as is taught to me, is a union between a man and a woman.
I'm reading from today's Irish News, and on the front page, criminalise homosexuality, says leading DUP councillor. I'll read from part of the article written by Brendan Hughes, the DUP leader and one of the North Super Councils last night said homosexuality should be illegal, as his party came under pressure to clarify its stance on gay rights. This is senior councillor Paul McLean, who has said that the party does not have any such policy. Well, the party is saying they don't have any such policy. This is the DUP. But he reckons that homosexuality should be illegal. This is a party you're doing deals with.
You know I don't believe in that. We had this conversation on your programme yesterday.
But the whole point is, this is a party who you are aligning yourself with.
And as
this
I have
explained
to you...
This is a party who you're saying to the people in East and North Belfast, you're saying to them, vote for them. Vote for that party who has people in them who think gay people, their sexuality, should be illegal. Sorry.
I am trying to maximise the number of pro-union MPs who are returned from Northern Ireland. It was 9 out of 18 last time. I would like it to be a majority this time.
Is there no point at which maximising MPs comes below someone's freedom, someone's right to be gay? Is the union about everything to you, Mike?
This is a Westminster election. These issues, such as same-sex marriage, are devolved to the Assembly. That's why it was debated and voted upon yesterday. So a lot of these issues that you're raising, to my mind, quite validly, are issues for this time next year, for the 2016 Assembly election. And as I told you yesterday, when it comes to remarks such as the ones that you're quoting from, and that's coming from somebody who's not a member of my party, but if it came from a member of my party, you know from my track record, that I will not tolerate it and that I will not be slow or I will not be indecisive in taking action.
But the point I'm making...
No matter who it is.
But the point I'm making is that for the people of East and North Belfast, you're telling those people that party that allows members of their party to say homosexuality should be illegal, vote for them.
What I'm saying is if you cherish the union, and these are very uncertain times, not least because of the momentum and the impetus behind the SNP, these are dangerous times. It is best, in my assessment, to send pro-union MPs to Westminster. However, if you think you'd be better off with an abstentionist, anti-union MP in North Belfast, you know where to put your X.
I'm nearly out of time, but you would also oppose the 50% tax rate for the highest earners in this country. Why is that?
Because there's no evidence that that increases the tax take. And the most important thing is how much money is in the Treasury.
But you believe in reducing the deficit and you don't believe in saying to those...
Everybody believes in reducing the deficit.
And those high earners...
Everybody believes in reducing the deficit.
That are making over 150 grand a year. You don't believe in taking more off them.
I believe
likes of those wealthy bankers that might set up one of these banks.
I believe in maximising the tax take, and the evidence, and it's global evidence, is that if you put up that rate, you actually lower the tax take because there's more avoidance and more evasion going on. Do you know the debt per household in the United Kingdom is currently nearly £55,000 per family? That's not much of a legacy to leave for our children and our grandchildren.
If you have any MPs, will you support the Tories or Labour Party?
Yeah, who knows what the result is going to be? I'm not being presumptuous. We had a very good showing in the local government elections last year,
so
we have reasons to be optimistic.
Yeah. Well, Labour or
until I know, well, who are we negotiating with, and what is their strength? I do not know.
Have you a preference at the moment?
No.
Your old Tory friends?
What I have done over the last number of months, and indeed couple of years, is ensure that we have very good relations with both the Conservatives and the Labour Party, and that is different, as you are suggesting, from the position we were in this time.
So you have no preference between the Labour and the Tory Party?
At this stage, I do not. But if we are in a position where negotiating, we shall do so with our values, and our values are not an auction item. They're not available to the highest bidder. We think that the best result for the United Kingdom is a stable union from the 8th of May onwards. And the best result from Northern Ireland is a...
What would your big ticket ask be from one of those parties? If you were over there, what would be at the top?
Mental health is very close to the top because we have these, as I say, tens of thousands of people who woke up this morning with no sense of purpose in their lives. They need help, not just medical. There's also a resilience and a capacity issue within communities. If you look at the map of the troubles and where they impacted the most, and you put on top of that today's mental health issue in terms of completed and attempted suicides, alcohol, drug, it's nearly a match, Stephen. We know the problem is there, but we do need resources to tackle it if you're going to do it properly. It is a massive, massive issue, but it would be a game changer for our society.
Mike Nesbitt, thank you very much for coming in this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.